This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Quick warning before we begin. This episode contains strong language. Last week, Alan the private investigator told us that to work out where Dr. Ruja is now, we need to find out what sort of person she is. We need to look into her background.
8:10 in the morning. We're already on board a very early flight to Munich.
Sometimes your past gives away clues about your future.
A few years ago, she was involved, we don't know exactly, but involved with her father buying up some factory in southern Germany. And we've managed to track down somebody who was working at the factory, who I think can give us, shine a bit of a light on her before she was Dr. Ruja, the visionary crypto queen.
We've come to southern Germany, to the small picturesque town of Waltenhofen, to meet Carlos and Sebastian, who are union reps for the factories here.
Hey, Sebastian.
One of the factories they represent was called the Waltenhofen Gaswerks.
We can't wait to talk to you about this. We're really excited.
Okay.
Some days at the morning, I think about her under the shower. Think about, about Ruja Ignatova. To destroy the working place and leave. That's not the way to treat us, to treat the workers.
She's putting on the same show she put on here 7-8 years ago. She's appearing like the big savior, just the way she appeared 8 years ago here in Waltenhof. It's starting again.
Episode 6, The Überflieger.
The people from this area are called Schwaben. People in Berlin say, well, you're a Schwabe. They mean you're just too organized. You're too clean. You're too German, basically.
People here don't talk too much, but they are kind people.
It's actually quite a bit of cliché, the work in this factory. The people put raw iron into big blast furnaces and they cast the metal. The hot glowing iron comes out at the bottom of the blast furnace. And they have this whole protection gear like from the Terminator 2, if you know that movie. The end scene, that pretty much describes the factory.
It's very important to tell about something to people in this factory. They are proud workers, very special people in this factory, because the job in this factory is very hard. It's very hot, you don't know the clean ground. And maybe they work there because the qualification to make this job. It's not very high. It's very hard to work, but the people have a great heart.
How many people were working at the factory in 2008, 2009?
114.
And are they all from this neighborhood?
They're all from this area. They are local people and they work there for a long time, for many years, and the fathers before.
In 2009, 5 years before OneCoin started, Waltenhofen Gaswerks was looking for a new owner. It was well known in the area for its high-quality industrial moulds, and there were several possible buyers. But one stood out. A businesswoman with an impeccable CV.
So when did you first hear that name, Ruja Ignatova?
2009. I have to talk with her. Die war sehr.
She told Carlos she had secured a large bank loan and was prepared to buy the factory.
Ruja Ignatova was, at the time, really, really convincing. she was eloquent, she was well-spoken, she came to Carlos and she convinced him from the beginning that she had the best intentions with this factory.
Tell me a bit more about the first time you spoke to her. Was it in person or was it over the phone?
In person.
What did she look like?
like a businesswoman. I look like a businesswoman. The clothes are very fine clothes, open hairs, long hairs, black color, red lipstick. Yeah, I remember exactly.
How about the father? What was he, how did he look and how did he sound?
It sounds like a metal worker and he looks like a metal worker.
Her father has a background actually working in foundries. He's a working man.
We need something who know about the metalwork. That was the father, and I need a person for the financial things, and that was the daughter. So for me, it was the perfect person.
So when she leaves the room after your first meeting, what are you feeling then?
I'm happy. I'm happy about the people, and I think, okay, let's go.
First year, we didn't have a single reason to suspect anything.
Ruzsa was born in Bulgaria, but at the age of 8 or 9, around the time of the collapse of the Soviet Union, the Ignatov family moved to southern Germany. They settled in a small town called Schramberg, which was about 100 kilometres west of Waltenhofen.
Martin Himmelheber, hello?
Martin.
Hi, Martin. Hello.
Martin Himmelheber is a local journalist from Schramberg.
I do classical local journalism meetings of the city council and whatever comes up. Earlier this year, I got a hint that there are two super thieves of money worldwide, indeed lived in Schramberg for about 10 years.
When Konstantin Ignatov was arrested in March 2019, Martin started digging into the family's past.
I would like to talk about a teacher who taught Ruzsa in those years. She was extremely intelligent, that's what she told me. She never had a child before or afterwards being such an intelligent person.
Wow.
She was an Überflieger, as we call it. She was a high flyer. She was very attractive, black hair, the red lipstick. Her dress was auffallend, extravagant.
How old was she?
Pupil, 15 years of age. She was very proud of herself. But she wasn't very popular. Other people said she was arrogant. Because of her intelligence, being the star doesn't make you very popular in a class. She absolutely was the star. She was phenomenal. That's the word the teacher says. She was just phenomenal in with her intelligence.
Martin's also managed to find her yearbook from when she was 18.
There are two photos of Ruzsa in this yearbook. And she looks quite similar to the photos have seen on Facebook pages of her, with the long black curly hair and the red lips. You can recognize her immediately. And she describes herself in her own words, she says.
Ruzsa was always friendly to everyone. She was always well-behaved and cheerful, and the teachers were deeply fond of her. She doesn't drink, and she would never degrade herself to eating pizza. Her favorite classes were PE, she was faultless, and now and then she likes RE. Generally, she got on very well with her colleagues. Stop. Maybe we should stick to the truth? Okay, fine. Maybe I did take pleasure in tormenting some students. I was always looking for the chance to spread new, amusing stories about them. In PE, I was more of a visiting guest, and I should probably not say too much on the topic of religious wars, because then you really would get a false impression of me. On school trips, I nourished myself purely on Baileys and pizza, but I survived it.
I still wonder what made her change. made her change into a criminal.
It's almost as if there are two Rouges. The brilliantly clever one who impresses everyone she meets, and another, darker, more callous one.
The first time we felt something was amiss was about a year after they took over the company, the people working there. They came to us and told us, Miss Ignatova has a consulting company, which she owns, and she has hired her own company to consult the factory, paying herself out of factory money.
What sort of consultancy?
Just basic business consulting, like any, what do consulting companies ever do, actually? Apparently it was something about rebranding the company or something.
The next step, business car, like a Porsche Cayenne.
Well, she turns up in a Porsche.
Really close after taking over the factory, she made sure that she drive Porsche Cayenne.
For the factory workers, it's difficult, because the factory workers say, hey, Miss Ignatova, you have a big car and I have less money. That's difficult about. And the next step, Ignatova goes to Bulgaria with her car, the Porsche, and come back by train, because the Porsche in Bulgaria was stealing.
A Porsche was stolen.
Yeah, it was stolen. Says. Yeah, that's what she says.
And you're thinking...
Okay. Interesting.
Worse was to follow. As part of the deal for buying the factory, Ruja's father, Plarman, had promised two bits of machinery called blast furnaces to replace the old existing ones. These are expensive and hard to get, but were essential.
Without those furnaces, production couldn't go on. At that point, it was really difficult to talk to her. Try to put pressure on her, where we try to say, Miss Ignatova, we need that furnace now. Please act now. She just walked out. She just went up and left.
Where's the father at this point? What's he doing?
The father was sick and he was in Bulgaria. He was out of the picture for that time.
Without the necessary equipment, production was slowing down and the debts were mounting up. Some of the workers started protesting outside Dr. Ruja's house, a few miles away from the factory. And then, something familiar.
We got a call from the factory. The factory has been sold.
Sold?
Yeah. Ignatova sold the factory to a man for apparently €1. The factory has been sold and Ignatova is gone.
Ignatova was one day in the factory and the next day we don't found her. Zum Schluss, in der Nacht, als sie dann verschwunden war, sie war auch tatsächlich verschwunden.
The night she disappeared. Laptops were broken in the factory. Papers vanished, never to be seen again. It made for us the impression that somebody tried to hide something.
The factory was down. I know that. And the new owner cannot build it up. I'm sure. Let's say the end. Factory was dead.
Is the factory there now?
The factory is there now. It's closed. You can see the factory from outside. The factory is closed. Never reopened again.
And how did all the workers react to this? I mean, what did this mean for their lives?
I don't know if you have a feeling for proud workers. They destroy something. Destroy this. He destroy his future, his work, and that's, it's very difficult. For me, it's difficult to talk about. Yeah.
Most of the people working there, they don't have good qualification. So most of the people just were out of work. 140 families.
I don't leave her.
You still think about her?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so 8 years later, and you're still... She's still on your mind.
And I'm very happy to meet you, because you don't let her go.
Have people contacted you since the OneCoin story?
You're the first one. No, no authorities. Nobody ever showed up here to ask about what happened back then here.
I think for the people, that's another story.
Different world.
Different world. That's another story.
Yeah. It's not, is it?
Exactly the same story. Yeah.
It's the same story.
This time, the law caught up with Dr. Ruja. In 2016, she was convicted in a German court for several crimes: intentional breach of duty in the event of insolvency, fraud, withholding and embezzlement of employees' wages, and violation of accounting duties. She received a 14-month suspended sentence and an €18,000 fine. The local newspaper reported that Ruja reappeared to attend the ruling and showed no emotion when the judgment was passed down. She quietly slipped out and returned to Bulgaria and carried on with OneCoin as if nothing had happened.
In the opinion of the people who lost their jobs, like, that's not a high sentence for destroying 140 families' lives. That's not nothing at all.
You must have thought, she's vanished, we'll never see her again. When did you then see her again?
The local media give me a sign that Carlos look about Miss Ignatova and OneCoin.
Suddenly she was this internet celebrity. How she got there, what happened there, how that person was still somebody after what she did here.
What do you think when you saw her again?
Interesting. Interesting. I think, it's a little bit bigger, a little bit more bigger.
You recognize the same, like the same pattern again.
If you think about it, like, you need the exit strategy. She learned that here. You need to get out without leaving a trace.
But she didn't disappear. She turned up to the court. She stayed.
Yes, because it didn't work back then. It didn't work back then. Tried disappearing, but she didn't go the full Monty. So this time she knew, if I want to get out, I need to get out completely. I need to disappear.
And she's away.
You won't read this in the official OneCoin literature. They bury this story in endless posts about Dr. Ruja's sparkling past.
OneCoin. The founder of OneCoin, Dr. Ruja Ignatova, has a solid background in finance.
Like the fact that she's a doctor.
And a PhD in law.
And we haven't actually checked this yet. We've just been calling her Dr. Ruja the whole time.
Hello.
The question I had was whether or not you could confirm if she studied at the university. And
yeah, I can say she studied law successful at our university.
Yes.
And she finished her PhD in law at the University of Konstanz.
Right.
It is true that she studied and did her PhD here.
Fantastic.
Okay, no problem.
Thank you again. Bye-bye. Bye. She is a doctor. She is Dr. Ruja.
She's smart.
Later that evening, Carlos and Sebastian take us out for some local food in the town square.
Walking and eating and drinking all together.
We'll have a schnitzel.
Where I learn that apparently sauerkraut and schnitzel aren't meant to be ordered together.
You cannot eat schnitzel and sauerkraut.
No, do they not go together?
Who knew? Carlos wants to tell us a bit more about Ruja's personal life.
I have some pictures. This was the picture from buying the factory.
Yeah, look, this is...
Yeah, the same.
And that's Plamen.
Yeah.
That Plamen. So the mother.
She worked in the factory. I know her. I met her when I was there, and she makes some paper.
So anything about her you can remember? How she behaved? Did she speak German fluently?
She speaks German. Eine zurückhaltende Person?
Rather introvert person. Not very outgoing. Very quiet. She did minor work, cooking coffee and stuff like that. So just putting papers from one place to another.
When did she disappear? When did she go? Did she leave with the father?
Yeah. This Mr. Björn Strill. I know him when Mrs. Ignatova bought the factory. At this time, he was the husband.
Okay, hang on. So this guy, and it says he's based in Frankfurt and he works for Linklaters. This is a really respectable legal firm.
Yeah.
So this guy, so he's still working at Linklaters then?
This is from today.
So we have a we have a phone number here and the name of someone that was married to Dr. Ruja.
Yeah.
After her adventures in Waltenhofen, Dr. Ruja returned to Sofia in around 2012 and resumed work in finance. But I wonder if this wasn't enough for the star student, the Oxford graduate with a taste for expensive cars. I think she wanted more. And in early 2014, she found it. The year that Dr. Ruja bought the Waltenhofen factory, 2009, was also the year that Bitcoin arrived. By the time she abandoned the factory in 2012, a revolution was underway in finance and money. And a lot of smart and ambitious entrepreneurs started buying and selling Bitcoin, and many even created their own cryptocurrencies. It was a new gold rush. Just like the original gold rush of the 19th century Wild West, it also attracted chancers and snake oil salesmen.
The second pillar is this one, the Bitcoin, the heart of the company.
In 2014, Dr. Ruja appeared on stage in China, promoting a brand new cryptocurrency sold through multi-level marketing. Not one coin, Bitcoin.
Make Bitcoin successful.
This, from early 2014, is the first footage of Dr. Ruja speaking publicly that we've seen.
Make the group bigger. This can be a huge success story. And I would like to thank you all.
With her that day was a man called Sebastian Greenwood.
Very happy to see so many people here today.
A serial entrepreneur with a string of failed MLM and online payment business ventures behind him.
You're very lucky people to sit in here today.
They'd met a couple of years earlier.
The
pair had hit it off. In Sebastian, Dr. Ruja had found someone she could work with.
How many of you tomorrow will register for an account?
Maybe she realized that his experience in e-commerce and MLM would be the perfect complement to her intellect.
Yes, tomorrow we open the doors.
Within a couple of years, Bitcoin quietly disappeared. But with Sebastian Greenwood's help, Dr. Ruja started to design something far more sophisticated and far more lucrative and daring than a factory in southern Germany.
This is the creator, the mastermind.
When OneCoin was launched in 2014, Dr. Ruja was the boss
of cryptocurrency, of OneCoin.
But Sebastian Greenwood took the next most powerful position in the network, responsible for the multi-level marketing side of the business.
Let's give a warm applause.
Remember that voice from episode one, when Dr. Ruja was introduced on the stage at Wembley Arena?
Dr. Ruja.
That was Sebastian Greenwood.
Ruja, where are you? Ruja.
In late 2018, Sebastian Greenwood was arrested in Thailand and extradited to the United States for running a digital currency pyramid scheme.
Thank you. So bright she can burn your eyes. Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you.
Sebastian Greenwood was an expert in multi-level marketing, but to make OneCoin go global, Dr. Ruja realised she needed credible people involved. Dr. Ruja also headhunted established professionals from more traditional sectors. One of those people was a man called Duncan Arthur. This is the first time he's talked to the media.
I'm happy going on record. I'm sick and tired of people hiding behind pseudonyms.
He's worked more with the OneCoin head office than anyone else we've spoken to.
If everybody is as brave as they want to be, they really need to put their neck out, and here's my neck.
In 2016, Duncan Arthur was working for a large American bank in London when he received a phone call.
An agency found me. I was sitting at my desk at the American bank feeling very miserable, wishing my phone would ring, and it rang. I was so unhappy that I was prepared to overlook things. All I could think about was not going back to the American bank.
OneCoin was smarter and more sophisticated than Bitcoin. They built an online marketplace like an Amazon where you could buy things with your OneCoin. It's called DealShaker.
I had more to do with DealShaker than anybody else. I realized that if you're going to have a proper coin, it needs to have usability. So it needs to have a marketplace. So we put together DealShaker.
So what sort of merchants were you getting in at the beginning?
Absolute rubbish. Absolute rubbish. It's like an online flea market. Absolutely abysmal. If you can find 10 things you would actually want and that you can actually pay 100% OneCoin for, I'll be amazed and I'll buy you a beer.
I can't say no to a free beer, so let's see if I can find some things on DealShaker I actually want to buy. You can buy things 100% in OneCoin on here, but up to 50% payment in euros is also allowed. So here we are, let's have a little browse. The first thing up is a unisex t-shirt with the OneCoin logo. €9.50 you pay, plus about €9.50 worth of OneCoin. So even they won't accept 100% OneCoin. They want euros. I mean, okay, and if we just scroll through, I mean, what a strange selection of things that you can buy here. I mean, basically, about half of these offers, everything for sale here, is either from China or Russia. Vapor-only water, a wellness thermal imager, psychological consultation here via Skype from Russia, high-tech vegetable garden allotment, car seat, boys' vest, children's vitamins, sunscreen, smoke sensor, gold eyelids?
What?
I don't know. Tina adult Pampers? What's that? A Chevrolet from Finland. Disinfectant. Yeah, I think, I've got to be honest, I think Duncan Arthur might have been right. I'm not going to find 10 things I want here. There's something called the Tranco list. Think of it like a popularity contest for websites. According to the Tranco list, Amazon is the 7th most visited website in the world. The online marketplace eBay is 41st. And in 172,097th place is DealShaker. Just a few places below the website for the London Borough of Ealing. There's a small box on the DealShaker homepage which updates every few seconds saying how many individual users are logged in at that moment. All websites have what's called a diurnal rhythm. People wake up and people go to bed, which means the number of people visiting a website drops at night. We know that China has the most listings on DealShaker and the most OneCoin investors.
5:29 p.m. in Beijing.
So, as night falls in Beijing, user numbers should go down.
594,449 individual users logged in to DealShaker.
I kept a short diary to check.
It's 7:15 p.m. in Beijing on the 12th of October 2019, and there are currently 594,506 individual
users. It's currently 10:50 p.m. in Beijing, 594,500.
It's 2:15 a.m. in Beijing on Sunday the 13th.
It's 5:06 a.m.
It's 6:45.
And there are currently 594,629.
No matter what time of day or night it is, DealShaker always has between 593 and 595,000 users logged in.
It's 1 a.m. in Beijing, and there are 595,169 users logged in to DealShaker.
We've put our allegations to OneCoin. To the allegation that OneCoin is not a cryptocurrency, OneCoin replied,
OneCoin verifiably fulfills all criteria of the definition of a cryptocurrency. Its value is confirmed and reflects the constant worldwide trading activities, such as the DealShaker platform, one of the major global trading platforms.
To our claim that nobody can trade OneCoin on an open exchange and that profits come only from commission for getting others on board, OneCoin replied,
it is already untrue that OneCoin is not tradable. DealShaker is one of the major global trading platforms and has been continuously developed further by us. As stated many times, there are various reasons why cryptocurrencies could become the generally accepted payment means of the future.
When asked for further comment, OneCoin told us that we had
prepared an 8-part podcast series with information provided by many haters, former employees and sanctioned IMAs for fraud or TNC violations who chase personal gain. For now, no further comments will be made.
We will continue to put our claims to OneCoin and include any responses in later episodes.
When they say to us, as they have done, that DealShaker is a major global trading platform, as the person that actually built it, what's the right response?
Bullshit. For them to tell you that activity on DealShaker has any bearing on the price of the coin is a complete lie. It's not a major global trading platform. It's not even a proper trading platform. And the price is not determined with anything to do with DealShaker, I can promise you.
How do you know that?
Because I know the back end of DealShaker and I was part of when it was programmed and put together and everything else.
Given all your experience, why were you involved with this for so long? I mean, they were mentioned the red flags early on.
I'm probably responsible more than anybody else for keeping this alive for so long. And that's something I've got to live with. It kept a lot of people believing longer than they should have.
How do you feel about that now?
Not very good.
Duncan worked closely with the head office in Sofia and can tell us something about what happened when Dr. Ruja disappeared.
My relationship with the Sofia office was always very warm. There are some really talented, bright people there. They just do a job. You know, they're in a bubble within a bubble. The only networkers they meet are that maybe 2.5 or 1% who are successful. The guys who make the stupid hand sign, go on to sell whatever. They don't run into the Ugandan granny or the person in New Zealand who has to decide whether to sell their house or not send their child to university. That just doesn't happen. Nobody thought Ruja was gone forever. We always thought she was going to walk into the office any day now. It's just the longer she was away, the more it became apparent that she wasn't going to. I did speak to somebody in the office who said that round about that period, she was incredibly tearful and anxious. Apparently, she was not herself.
Did the mother seem to be acting weirdly or worried or stressed?
Peculiar. I didn't see the mother until about 2 months afterwards.
How did she feel that? What was she saying then? Because it's weird for you not to, for your daughter to have been disappeared for 2 months. A mother would be terrified and
devastated.
But when you saw the mother 2 months after she disappeared, what was she like?
The same as she always is.
Didn't seem upset.
No, nothing out of the ordinary.
Do you think there was a plan she would disappear and that then that was just executed, or do you think it was done on the fly?
I think it was. There was a plan.
We're starting to get a clearer picture of who Dr. Ruja is. Brilliantly intelligent, utterly convincing, ambitious, expensive tastes. But what does this tell us about where she might be now? Duncan Arthur told us that he thought Dr. Ruja planned to disappear. Having been in Voltenhofen, where she'd done exactly the same thing, and learning how intelligent she is, I think he's probably right. But now we also know that she was close to her family. She took over the factory with her father, and her mother Veska worked there too. According to Duncan, when Dr. Ruja vanished, Veska was still working in the office in Sofia, and yet she seemed unfazed by her daughter's sudden disappearance. That doesn't make any sense. I can't imagine Dr. Ruja could go long without seeing her family. And yet for 2 years, there has not been a single sighting of Dr. Ruja anywhere. Until...
Hello?
Hi, Jim, it's Alan McLean here.
Alan's the private investigator we spoke to last week.
OK, I've got a bit of good news for you.
Oh, yeah?
So, I have two friends who are working out in a close protection contract in Athens.
Huh.
OK. So what I did was I sent a number of photos of our target, really. Yes?
Yeah.
So because she does change appearance quite often.
Photos of Dr. Ruja that you'd got.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what they did was they made some inquiries. I told them they target high-end restaurants. They went to one of the restaurants and one of the waiters there recognised the girl and said that she'd been there in the last 6 to 7 months.
No.
Yep. They'd been there 6 to 7 months, could identify, was able to say that there was an entourage of, you know, maybe 10 to 12 people.
Oh, my
now,
God.
I said to him, I said, how sure are you that she could identify? He said, 100%, mate. She knew and recognised that lady. 100%, she knew them.
Next time.
So, is she alive?
It appears so, yes.
The Missing Crypto Queen is presented by me, Jamie Bartlett. It's written and researched by me, Jamie Bartlett, and Georgia Catt. And Georgia Catt is the producer. Philip Sellers is the editor. Phil Channel and Desislava Stefanova in the London Bulgarian Choir are responsible for the music. Remember to share and rate our podcast if you can. It is a BBC Radio Documentaries production for BBC Sounds. We've been asking you to contact us with your stories about OneCoin, cryptoqueen@bbc.co.uk. We're getting lots of messages in, including this one from earlier this week.
I heard about it in 2017. For me, I was sold, especially the fact that this was led and run by a female CEO. Individually, the most I know that somebody's put in is probably over €100,000. The group that I invested with is kind of family and friends. We were told that when the exchange happens, our coins are going to go directly into our account and we'd be able to then trade it for fiat currency or buy things on different platforms. It has been one date after another of false promises of the exchange is going to happen this date in October. Then, no, sorry, it's going to happen again in January. Then it's going to happen again, I believe it was in April, and nothing has happened. Last I heard a few days ago was that it's actually going to go on the public exchange within 2 weeks. But yes, I do think my money's gone.
BBC Sounds.
Hi, I'm Charlie Howard. I'm getting ready for Fashion Fix.
I'm so excited!
My new podcast that shows us how to get our fashion fix while fixing the world.
Stop buying the cheap clothes. We'll be helping workers. We'll be helping Mother Earth as well.
And each other.
I'm ready to recover from my eating problems. I'm just ready to move on.
You can download and subscribe to Fashion Fix with me, Charlie Howard, on the BBC Sounds app. See you soon.